Hello, everybody.
Hello.
And welcome to our not quite so regular at the moment Monday stream.
Yes.
We've been trying to do these as we can.
Yes.
If I can speak correctly.
I think everyone's got a frog in their throat
yes.
this evening.
And I was actually okay until we went on air. lies, I just remember.
Yes. Don't let them tell you lies. We are not late. We are actually experiencing an element of time dilation. So hopefully that will pick back up and we will all resync onto the same plane of existence before the stream is over.
Never blackpilled, never late, never again.
And this, of course, time dilation is no consequence of us engaging in some sort of time travel so that we can bring you predictions about the future.
Yes. If you guys do want to support us, though, the best way to do so is via the Ko-fi. That is linked in the description below. It is also the pinned comment in the chat.
Yes, and if you want to use any other methods, there is the Substack, if you want to subscribe over there, where you can get these as a podcast that you can download with no ads. Or if you have YouTube Premium, you could also become a member. There is also the usual super chats and all that guff that we try and get to as we go through the stream. But, I don't know, I suppose we should just kind of... Once, before I forget that vital part.
Yes.
It was really windy at the weekend, and it rained a lot, and the weather was really rubbish. Where's summer gone?
Yeah, summer has disappeared. Where has summer gone? We don't have summer anymore. It has abandoned us.
Except when we might have summer again this weekend.
So. Oh, hopefully.
Other than that, I don't think there's anything major to update on, so I suppose to a certain extent we might just want to hit the ground running. And we'll preface the stream with a warning.
Yes.
To anyone ever again excuses some aspect of engaging with containment or some sort of obvious misstep under the justification that they are shifting the Overton window, they will be aptly defenestrated through said window.
I'm also rather proud of that thumbnail. I don't know. It tickles my autisms. I just think it reads nicely. Okay. I just like the thumbnail.
We don't really even like talking about this stuff. You just do it to make the thumbnails, and we just kind of fill the rest.
Yeah. This is actually really a thumbnail project.
Yes.
I'm afraid it's also going to morph into a weekly gift basket, or maybe some kind of like a haiku slogan agency. Who knows?
Excuse me. I think you'll find that we are a loot box now.
Yeah, we are no longer a political stream. We are now a loot box. But. The idea for this stream came about because we rely on a lot of political instruments, political rules of thumb, dialectic tools, and general kind of political thought that we take as background noise, take as granted. We take these terms as part of the normal online political lexicon.
Yes, and so much so that we don't have it quite linked here, but there is even an article that I could have put along with the other stuff we've got here that literally says, why is everybody using the phrase Overton window? Why is this everyone's new favourite political tool? And we're even so far past that period of like 5-6 years ago that people are just completely saturated in the term.
Yes, it underpins a lot of people's assumptions, and it underpins a lot of people's assumptions about online action, in quotes, and the way that you can create change. It is a... Ultimately, as we'll get to, is a formulation that has taken a few mutations from where it originally came from. But it has been, again, it is taken as rote that the Overton window as an entity exists. But the definition of it, the political theory behind it, and the application of the so-called Overton window all show that it's based on the exact same liberal priors all other neoliberal theory is based on. But shall we get to kind of an idea of, what is the Overton window?
Yes, the Overton window, at least as we are told, because Mr. Joseph Overton is no longer with us, was just this sort of idea he came up with whilst he was the vice president of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, which is sort of a vaguely conservative-y, libertarian-y, Reaganite NGO that I think has been around since possibly as early as the 80s, possibly. I might have that wrong there, though. I didn't go looking into the Mackinac Centre itself because we only have so much time. But he's sort of some sort of chemical guy. He goes and gets his degree. He's a bit of a technocrat, and then decides at some point, of course, because he doesn't want a real job, he'll go work for a political think tank.
Yes, he goes to work for a think tank. And his original formulation that became the Overton Window, became his legacy, is that he said it was the responsibility of these think tanks to propose policies outside of the Overton Window, in quotes, to shift it. But he never really talked about public opinion. Or at least he never talked about it as the driving force. What he yes. said was it was the responsibility of those who invent the political future to move it in a direction that is beneficial to their political faction. Yes. It is a very different formulation than what it eventually became.
I think he's more subtle here. We'll read this out word for word. The idea eventually became known as the Overton Window and his lasting legacy. He opined that it is the responsibility of think tanks to propose policies outside the window and shift the Overton Window. Now, that's just a little snippet I've pinched from Wikipedia, but as far as I can tell, it's one of the earliest sort of attributed explanations from Overton himself.
Yes, it is sourced as well. It's just sourced in a publication that we don't currently have access to.
Yes, and it's not, as you say, it's not a abstract appeal to the concept of public opinion, but rather a explanation directly of what he believes the role of a think tank as a client group is, or as an intermediary.
Yes, he's explaining what he thinks the role of these political organizations that do policy invention and really do kind of political theory invention in certain cases, as he's been doing here, should be doing, and that they should be quote-unquote moving the discourse.
But this happened sort of in the mid-90s. And again, I believe in the Atlantic article from about 2018 or so, where there was an interview with another gentleman we'll get to in a second, Joseph G. Lehman, as we should probably pronounce, there is the suggestion that this was not even necessarily an attempt at creating an ideology or a concept. It was literally just his like buzzword way of selling think tank involvement to donors.
Yes, it's also a great way...
It's like his own crayon drawing for pretending like this is how... It's his crayon drawing for not admitting that public opinion is manufactured by saying how they do it.
It is. Originally, this seems to be his original conception of the Overton Window is a way to sell the influence of think tanks in that they can actually move the political conversation or the public perception of conversation or even the conversation taking place in the country at large in general. That was seems to be his original conception. But then you end up with this concept of the Overton Window, which was only codified posthumously. It reminds me actually of Randianism and Yaron Brook, and that the work of Rand was codified after Rand's death by neoconservatives.
Yes.
And really, the Overton Window was codified after Joseph Overton's death by neoliberals.
Posthumously, yes.
Yes.
I suppose we should get on to, I think we'll just go for the next link we've got there, which is the Overton Window page on the Mackinac Centre, which appears to be like one of their big claims to fame now.
Yes.
And I thought for the sake of doing a little bit of like 101 with this stuff, we'll just kind of read through it. Because some of it's almost laughable knowing what we know and what we've talked about previously.
Yes.
So that's what I don't know. Do you want to do the subtext there as well?
Oh, yes. Ever wonder how politicians choose which policies they'll support? Or have you ever noticed that a politician championing one policy idea can win an election in one country, but at the same time, no politician in your country will support the same policy? The Overton Window of political possibility can help explain these phenomena.
Ooh, please do tell us, think tank geniuses.
Oh, God.
I'll just bugger the video off. We'll just read it.
Yeah.
A brief explanation of the Overton Window. The Overton Window is a model for understanding how ideas in society change over time and influence politics. This is ideas influencing politics, not politics influencing ideas.
Yes.
The core concept is that politicians are limited in what policy ideas they can support. They generally only pursue policies that are widely accepted through society as legitimate policy options. You can see already where they're starting to change the way that this was formulated.
Yes.
These policies lie inside the Overton Window. Other policy ideas exist, but politicians risk losing popular support if they champion these ideas. These policies lie outside the Overton Window.
Ooh.
But the Overton window can both shift and expand, either increasing or shrinking the number of ideas politicians can support without unduly risking their electoral support. Sometimes politicians can move the Overton window by themselves, courageously endorsing a policy lying outside the window, but this is rare. More often, the window moves based on a much more complex and dynamic phenomenon, one that is not easily controlled from on high, the slow evolution of societal values and norms.
Well, we'll leave that one there, but I've got another little slide here which talks about the fact that, yes, the Joseph C...
This is Joseph G. Lemon, yes. Who was Overton's sort of work buddy in the Mackinac Center for at least about a decade or so. And again, is the man who's sort of responsible for posthumously creating even this concept of the Overton window. And he goes on to say, as you've got here, many believe that politicians move the window, but that's actually rare. In our understanding, politicians typically don't determine what is politically acceptable. More often, they react to it and validate it. But generally speaking, policy change follows political change, which itself follows social change. The most durable policy changes are those that are undergirded by strong social movements.
In more contemporary descriptions of the Overton window, there is a greater emphasis on social change or appeal to a wider, flatter, and more homogenous concept of public life. Prior to the revolution of mass and scale, the Overton window would have made no sense, as there is no such thing as consensus-based rule, at least not to the extent as it exists today. Ergo, a consensus around acceptable ideas or policies would never be required, because you're not living in a managerial society.
No.
The Overton window is based fundamentally on democratic bottom-up thinking and further on the marketplace of ideas by making the conversation more from friend-enemy and a more realist analysis into useless cul-de-sacs of debating ideas on their merits. This, you must understand that the entire idea of the Overton window and the concept you are relating to in the Overton window isn't just, quote-unquote, the acceptable ideas. Mm. It's not the concept of acceptable ideas. The concept of the Overton window is entirely based on the accidental view of history and the bottom-up creation of, quote-unquote, societal norms that guide all politics. You are conceding not only to the liberal framework and the democratic framework, but you are conceding to the popular framework.
Yes, and I want to suggest as well that maybe the Overton window can take many guises.
Yes.
You could get pulled into, instead of discussing, you know, in a very simple sort of class warfare sense almost, of whether or not an economic policy benefits X group or Y group, and rather you start discussing the economic policy on its merits in regards to economic theory.
Yes.
Or instead of discussing the fact that you're some sort of new woke policy is either just on the face of it something that shouldn't be done, people instead get pulled into a conversation about morality and then trying to debate, again, the merit of the policy on its morals, not on the fact that it's just being done.
Well, I think the most damning indictment of the Overton window is it's only existed in this form since 2003.
Which is funny, actually, because if we go to the next question here, can the Overton window be shifted by lies, distortions, or misunderstandings? Yes, but it's obviously wrong to intentionally disseminate misleading information. No one would ever do that.
You think politicians would do that?
Well, get just, up there and lie.
Just go on the internet and go on the media and tell lies. Again, I would glad you got to that, because I was about to get to that one. It's really funny that, if you add to the mix here propaganda, if you add state control of public opinion to the mix here, then the whole thing just completely collapses.
Yeah.
It's the fig leaf. I just love, it's such an awful fig leaf. It's obviously wrong to intentionally disseminate misleading information.
Yeah. The Overton window reflects what society believes, which can be as easily influenced by truth and facts as it can by or be by inaccurate or deceptive information. Even mistakes can shift the window. The massive underestimate of Medicare costs probably contributed to the program's creation in the 1960s. The false belief that weapons of mass destruction would be found in Iraq contributed to the support for that war. What's hilarious is, of course, that the Overton window as a formalised concept is predated by the misinformation that drove the Iraq War.
Yes,
campaign.
I'm going to say that this is a concept that did not exist before the Iraq War.
Yes.
If you think that the people during 9/11 were talking about how 9/11 shifted the Overton window, you're insane because it didn't exist yet. That is how new this concept is. People think this is like a concept from maybe the early 20th century or the late 19th century.
Yes, I do have a copy of Glenn Beck's book, The Overton Window, but I have not yet found the time to read
it. It's also like a piece of fiction.
Oh, but I will read it so graciously. But I do, how does the Mackinac Center use the Overton Window? The Mackinac Center uses the Overton Window to help promote its policies by providing information on political decision-making and attempting to influence citizens and lawmakers. The window can be shifted to make Michigan a freer and more prosperous state.
But yeah, you see that the Overton window is a political concept thought up by a think tank to peddle the idea that they can change the conversation when really what they're doing is responding to people in power.
Well, not what they're saying is, it's not that we can change the conversation, it's we can change the conversation for you.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
The Mackinac Center uses the Overton window to help promote its policies.
Yes.
Whose policies?
Yes.
who is this et that you speak of?
Yes, there's a lot of heavy lifting here. It seems that Joseph G. Lehman is Mr. Overton Window.
Yes.
He is the Overton Window. it's in our view, this is a deliberately backwards conception.
Of course.
By Mr. Lehman here. This is even worse. Is this just, again, more of the crayon drawing of the Overton window?
I'm not sure if I even had that one linked or not. I think that's a different link you've got there.
Okay. I've just got stuff here about, like, it's one of the first... this really only became popularised, I'd say, post-2010.
Right.
You really didn't hear about it kind of pre-2010.
Ah, fair enough. So is that one of the first sort of items on their website that actually speaks about
it? Yes, it's like 2011, which is kind of... Again, you're speaking about a concept here that didn't exist during the Iraq War.
Mm.
It only really came into existence 03-04 after the man it's named after's death, and it only really came into popular consciousness in kind of 2010-2011.
But yes,
and that is how recent this concept is.
And but people will recognise that this explanation given by Lehman himself, generally speaking, policy change follows political change, which itself follows social change. We don't believe a lick of that at all.
No, if you keep calm and remember your training, if you've been following the literature, as it were, if you know your onions, you'll know that pretty much indisputably at this point, I'd say. If you don't believe this, go read AA's essay that culture is downstream from law.
Yes,
because it makes some very compelling examples. He makes a great case for the civil rights movement existing in law long before it existed culturally. It's extremely obvious, and it is always our contention that politics happens from power. Politics is done by the power center. It sets the agenda, or else it wouldn't be in power.
No.
And therefore, if you're talking about bottom-up cultural change, well, the culture of a country is very, very obviously downstream from its law.
Yes.
What is legal and illegal, especially in a highly managed society like we have here, that nominally has a relatively high trust in its government too, you will see that culture is very strictly downstream from law.
Yes.
It only isn't in places that don't have proper sovereignty. They don't have the wielding of power. Like, you think of Africa.
Yes.
Where places, the things are technically illegal, but they aren't enforced.
Well, that's almost why there's a sort of negation of culture as we would recognize
yes.
it. Because there's even the practices that are formalized aren't even done in a hierarchical manner that can be recognized or, as you say, written into any sort of law. It's just man eat man.
Culture requires
or
order, and order requires law.
Yes.
It's ultimately what it is.
There are a few articles out there, because I specifically looked up, like, shifting the Overton window as, like, as a sort of phrase, and I actually found that sort of a number of specifically leftist and Marxist pieces.
Yes, as always, the Marxists do understand power, but not much else. One of the best ones you found, actually, is a Jacobin article from 2020, September 2020.
Can we quickly go to the top first couple of paragraphs first before we come back down to here?
Of course. Unfortunately, this is a kind of a weirdly formatted article. It's one of those ones where you want to read from here?
Yes.
That bit just doesn't... I hate Web3 in quotes right. design. It's awful.
This is a Bernie bro in, is it 2019, 2020?
2020, yes. Yes.
Now, I'm going to... We'll read the first two paragraphs here on their own, and I want you to think about how much this might sound like someone internally describing the dynamics of the groups we exist in.
Yes.
If you've been involved in left politics in the last 4 years, you've probably heard a lot about the Overton window. We've been told that Bernie Sanders has shifted the Overton window with his social democratic policy proposals. That Bernie and Trump have jointly managed to break the Overton window, and radical slogans like abolish the police must be supported by anyone who wants any sort of police reform because it shifts the Overton window in the right direction. Sometimes, people who use these phrases are making a purely descriptive claim. Shifts occur in which ideas are widely discussed by political commentators. In 2014, for example, only a handful of prominent figures were foregrounding single-payer national health insurance. Now, everyone who talks about politics for a living has said something about whether Medicare for All is a good idea. This in turn has helped spur centrists to develop proposals that lie somewhere in between Medicare for All and the healthcare laws currently on the books. No one denies that shifts of this kind happen. The question is why they are happening and how consequential to real politics these evolutions are. Can shifting the Overton window help the left get closer to achieving our goals?
Shall we go down to here?
Yeah, we'll get to the problem with the Overton window.
The problem with the Overton strategy.
Yes, sorry. In a way, the idea that we should put forward radical demands, not in order to achieve them, but so that less radical versions of them will become policy, just sounds like common sense. Any union negotiator will tell you that it makes sense to bring ideas to the bargaining table that are highly unlikely to make it into the actual contract. If you demand 11, you might at least end up with 3. The problem with using this analogy as a prism for thinking about what kind of a left political agenda we're putting forward is that there are some fairly large and relative disanalogies between these two cases. To start with, a union negotiator suggesting contract language it would be difficult for the boss to accept knows that the union's members would love these proposals. Those 2 extra weeks of paid vacation every year might never become a reality, but that's not because the people on whose behalf the negotiator is working don't want them. Contrast to that, demanding the abolition of all policing in a country where 81% of black Americans don't even want police presence in their neighbourhoods to be reduced. Demanding 11 is sometimes a good strategy for getting a nervous enemy to grant you 3. But it's far less clear that when the majority of the people you would think would benefit from a policy don't even want 2, demanding 11 will get them to want 3.
Yeah, you can't actually control people's opinions by just saying things. It's magical thinking. It doesn't actually work like that.
In at least some cases, it might even have the opposite effect. It remains to be seen whether the gambit will pay off, but Donald Trump certainly seems to believe that he'll get a lot of mileage at blurring the lines between A, the tepid and grotesquely inadequate police reforms proposed by Joe Biden, B, the more popular idea of defunding the police, and C, police abolitionism, and using popular fear of C as a cudgel against even A. To be clear, I don't think the possibility of the right using this kind of rhetorical strategy against us is a good enough reason not to put forward radical policy proposals. Right-wing fearmongers will lie about any progressive idea as a matter of course. The point is just that we have little reason to believe that proposing very unpopular ideas will do anything to make more moderate versions of those ideas more popular.
They're just doing like friend-enemy stuff here.
Yes.
Which is quite interesting.
The second related problem is that company negotiators aren't going to come back with a proposal for an extra 2 days of paid vacation out of a sheer desire to continue to look reasonable in a situation where the boundaries of the discussion have shifted. If the demand has any impact, it's because the union has real-world leverage. Bargaining breaks down, the workers might walk off the job and hurt the company's bottom line. No parallel mechanism exists to make establishment politicians sit up and take notice when a faction that's out of power engages in a purely rhetorical escalation of its demands.
Yes.
Now, who does that sound like?
You can't just ask for things when you have no power or leverage. You can't shift the Overton window unless you gain some modicum of power, in which case you are doing it from your platform. You are doing it with the power you have. And the more power you have, the more you can quote unquote shift the Overton window because it's done by people in power.
But I think this is this is an immensely interesting little insight here, because what we are seeing is someone who is probably some sort of like social democrat leftist who, yeah, we'll read that last paragraph as
Oh,
well before
sure.
we move on to the next one. Coming to the realization that essentially the liberal view of how opinions and policies are derived begins to break down. He's essentially taking his Bernie Sanders face off and revealing a sort of Lenin skull underneath, finally.
Well, it's just the end bit here. You can't spook a majority of the population into wanting the things you think they should
Well, no,
want.
it's the line above, I think. Our goal is to shift public opinion our direction so that we can build up a movement with enough support to actually win such concessions. Or, better yet, to take power so we can implement our ideas ourselves.
There we go. It's just like, well, why are you trying to shift the Overton window when you can just win? It's like, well, why would I undertake this bizarre abstract exercise when I can just seize power? That is what's being said here, and it's a very
Do you
good
want to go
point.
on and do this section?
Radical politics with Overton delusions. One of them means that socialists should only advocate. Sorry, none of this means that socialists can only advocate things most people already support. It doesn't even mean that there's no value in making currently unthinkable ideas a little easier to imagine. About half of the articles I write for Jacobin are attempts to do exactly that. But the point of the exercise isn't to somehow, excuse me, trick skeptics into supporting something halfway in between our radical aspirations and the status quo. Sometimes the activity of the left wing will result in inadequate reforms implemented by establishment figures that greatly improve on previous conditions. But we don't get any closer to that goal by going for broke on a rhetorical level. Instead, that becomes possible when we build up a movement so powerful that our political enemies see the need to make concessions to stop us from coming to power.
Maybe he's got a point here, this bloke.
And the way we build up such movement is by clearly and persuasively articulating what we actually want in a way that's compelling to large numbers of people whose material interests would be served by the magi whose material interests would be served by the agenda. The leftists don't believe in the marketplace of ideas. Why do you?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, a lot of people in our audience don't, but yeah, it really is first we win.
Yes.
And unless your conception is first we win, then talking about shifting the Overton window by doing bottom up changing of what public opinion is insane.
And
And
then,
people just say it reflexively and then cry at you when you say there's something wrong with them.
but this gets even better this little bit here, because he's about to basically say exactly what we've just pointed out with the Mackinac Centre stuff as well. That's the opposite of verbally advocating things we aren't even sure make sense for the sake of shifting the Overton window. Doing the latter, if anything, undermines our ability to convince persuadable people that a better world is realistically possible. Ghoulish right-wing think tanks like the Mackinac Centre do advance the agenda of their wealthy donors, but the way they do it isn't well represented by Joseph Overton's cardboard slider moving some ideas into the window of political possibility by making previously unthinkable ideas a few steps beyond those proposals a bit more thinkable. Rather, the main value of think tanks to their donors' agenda comes from doing things like filling amicus briefs in court cases, providing cheat sheets of arguments used by partisans in debates about things that already are politically possible, and even writing sample laws that fit the pre-existing policy preferences of right-wing donors. A think tank or a political magazine that wants to be useful to its political goals might well spend some time, or even quite a bit of its time, advocating ideas that probably aren't going to become popular anytime soon. I'm a socialist. I don't just want to nationalise health insurance by implementing Medicare for All. I want to nationalise every hospital in the country by taking a page from Britain's post-war Labour government and creating a national health service. Oh, and I'd like the worker control of the means of production. That's pretty far outside of the window of political possibility in America in 2020.
Well, it's a good conception, and it shows that there's a lot more clear thinking about how power operates on the radical left, in quotes, or the revolutionary left, than there is on the non-revolutionary right. We are some of the only people who would describe ourselves as revolutionary right-wingers. But I suppose we should take this time to also reaffirm that as much as we don't believe in the Overton window, we do believe in the nation of Israel.
Oh, it's the most legitimate of all states.
it's the only democracy in the Middle East. Anyway, a better conception and a better way to look at this comes from Jack Ellul, yes. I would say. And we're going to have a couple of quotes here to set the scene from Jack Ellul's propaganda.
Yes, there's quite a section here, but I couldn't... This is kind of... I think we get into a space, especially trying to describe this dynamic, that we are so liberal, bottom-up-brained people in the world that we are brought up in, that it's hard to use normal language that people grasp to explain why this doesn't work. Because the words that you are using to them mean something completely different.
Well, we might do some more of this theme in that a lot of the political instruments, like I said at the beginning, we use are based on the liberal conception. They are based and grounded in the quote-unquote liberal world. And therefore, all of their based assumptions are they're complete surrender to the liberal framework.
Just someone in chat, all Overton windows look out upon the Holy Land, Star of David Hart.
Well, this is from Jack Ellul's propaganda. This is from page 26, and I'll read this first bit if you can read the next bit.
Cool.
The propagandist, therefore, does not normally address himself to the individual's intelligence. For the process of intellectual persuasion is long and uncertain, and the road from such intellectual conviction to action even more so. The individual rarely acts purely on the basis of an idea. Moreover, to place propaganda efforts on the intellectual level would require that the propagandists engage in individual debate with each person, an unthinkable method. That is the marketplace of ideas, in quotes. It is necessary to obtain at least a minimum of participation from everybody. It can be active or passive, but in any case, it is not simply a matter of public opinion. See propaganda only as something related to public opinion implies a great intellectual independence on the part of the propagandee, who is, after all, only a third party in any political action, and who is asked only one question. This obviously coincides with a conception of liberal democracy, which assumes that the most one can do with a citizen is to change his opinion in such fashion as to win his vote at election time.
The concept of a close relationship between public opinion and propaganda rests on the presumption of an independent popular will. If this concept were right, the role of propaganda would be to modify that popular will, which of course expresses itself in votes. But what this concept does not take into consideration is that the injection of propaganda into the mechanism of popular action actually suppresses liberal democracy, after which we are no longer dealing with the votes or the people's sovereignty. Propaganda therefore aims solely at participation. The participation may be active or passive. Active if propaganda has been able to mobilise the individual for action. Passive if the individual does not act directly, psychologically supports that action. And I think that's a fundamental point there. It's not about convincing the individual, because deep down, we all know that idea is fucking unbelievably stupid. What, the politicians are coming to you through the TV as an individual to convince you about the merits of their own ideas.
They are having an individual debate with you.
Yes, give over. What's happening is you are being emotionally manipulated. And a lot of the time, even people in our sphere still don't bother to think about that. Even, as they say, passive involvement in politics, even in sometimes a manner of apathy or protest,
yes,
can be just as dangerous as you being willed into some form of action that you wouldn't want to do against your own interests anyway.
Well, if we go back to the original conception of the Overton, of you know, Joseph Overton talking about how it's the think tank's responsibility to shift this magical, acceptable viewport of opinion and invent the political future to guide the public opinion. It is partially true, but with one very big caveat. These organizations, all think tanks, all of these policy crafting influence organizations must seek patronage to exist.
And this is the point I made about the explanation on the Mackinac Center's website.
Yes.
Where they're talking about its policies. No, you are not ruled by policy. You are ruled by people who yes. implement policy. Who rules? Who is served? And that's ultimately the question the leftist was asking himself. Is if we are running around shifting the Overton window, who are we actually serving in the process? Turns out it wasn't his ideological interests. And in the exact same regards, we would argue that when you go around doing it thinking you're shifting the Overton window to benefit what we want, you're probably not. Because as he pointed out, there is not that really magical point that exists between what you want and the status quo. You either want what you want or you've lived with the status quo. The compromise is essentially to be subject to.
Well, if someone is to undertake action to quote-unquote shift the Overton window, they would do so better with elite support. They would do so better the better resource they are. And think tanks not profitable in the traditional sense. As we have extensively mapped out, all policy crafting organizations of note have deep links to the security state. I'd recommend people go back and watch, well, basically all of our streams on containment, all of our streams on the Henry Jackson Society. The best example of this is Chatham House being founded as the UK equivalent of the Council on Foreign Relations. Mm. It was effectively created by the UK's initial incarnation of the security state to create this policy in the wake of World War One.
Well, it was an answer to the question of who sorts diplomacy if not the king.
Yes. Well, it also acts as a method of information laundering. If you see the someone like the Mackinac Center here, who are the people most promoting the idea of the Overton window, and they've really injected it in the political discourse, but they've done so because it benefits them, and it yes. benefits, in many ways, it benefits their donor class.
And especially if you're part of the sort of clown show of pretending that you're at odds with neoliberals or social democrats of the left, but really fundamentally you are both incentivized to believe in the think tank process, the yes. democratic process, then there is a sort of uniparty effort then to make this idea seem solidified, because it stands with the entire liberal view of how politics is supposed to be done.
Well, again, if you are looking to make things look popular, you'll create this illusion, as the think tanks and NGOs do, they're one of the main people who do this, and they usually justify it via polling, is to create this idea of the outside push, that the NGOs and these policy engines are independent in some way.
Yes.
They are not simply a sock puppet of the security state, as most of them are. You know, you've got the RAND Corporation. Again, we went into the Henry Jackson Society being paid directly by the Home Office, how the policy exchange is simply a extension of the Conservative Party and, you know, helps with security and security breaches with MI5 and things like that, with Henry Jackson Society's case. It's very clear as well that polling is meant to craft public opinion, not measure it, because as we said, public opinion isn't real and is therefore malleable because it's invented. Public opinion is the invention of those who supposedly measure and codify it, i.e., the think tanks.
Yes.
All of which have high degrees of security state backing. Sovereign is he who tells the public what their opinion is.
And this is an extremely dangerous myth as well. The security state uses the lie of bottom-up change to cover their security operations. This should be obvious, unless you actually believe the Arab Spring was a spontaneous outpouring of love for democracy, or that the 2014 Euromaidan coup revolution in Ukraine was motivated by water cooler chatter and policy, rather than what the CIA might have been threatening people with, or the slush funds they might have been throwing money at. The Overton window is ultimately no match for a bombing campaign.
Yeah, an information blitz isn't actually a substitute for a real blitz.
But it's just that people, no one in their right mind would think to describe the colour revolutions in the Middle East as the Overton window shifting.
No.
Not just to a certain extent because maybe some of those civilizations or societies don't have some of the more tertiary or intermediary bodies in them, More so because we fundamentally recognise that it's an entire sea change of the system that happens from outside that is willed upon it from massive international and imperial entities normally coming out of America. But when these same entities, through friendly faces like anti-wokeism or whatever other political trend that's carrying on that week, is used to influence the opinion of British people, it's the Overton window shifting. It's not imperialism anymore for some reason, because the ideas sort of in a very simple sense at least go in the same direction as us.
Well, as we've been into before, the stated and revealed preference of people is different, and that mostly people will be socially acceptable outwardly and inwardly feel that they have nothing to contribute with the things that are socially unacceptable. Mm. We don't get too far into that, but we've come up with kind of an alternate conception here, because the Overton window is such a poor term. Mm. And if you're going to talk about the allowable opinions, in quotes, within a population, you really have to talk about it as a hard rather than soft affair.
Yes.
And something that we're kind of cheekily calling the allure window can deal with a coup. Because ultimately, what is considered a socially acceptable belief in a mass society is shaped by the ruling elite.
Yes.
If there's a revolution and you have a new ruling elite, your quote-unquote socially acceptable politics completely changes. Look at Russia. Look at the Russian Revolution.
We were talking about this earlier on. We were sort of formalising some of the ideas for this stream. And in a certain sense, you could suggest that in a previous era, there would have been no concept of publicly acceptable political views, because the people who were granted the ability to have any political views that actually mattered were already by default determined acceptable. The idea that there had to be some element of consensus, as we mentioned earlier, between the views that the people in power have, how they apply them, and how you are subject to them. We never used to play fancy to this illusion, but now this illusion basically dominates most of our culture.
Yes, it does. It's amazing how much this illusion took over, that there is this spontaneous outpouring of popular will that creates the acceptable conversation, whereas that is buttressed by the idea of a politicized populace.
Mm.
Like we said, pre-1900, something like the Overton window wouldn't make any sense, because really, you couldn't become a pariah for your political beliefs in the same way you can now.
Mm.
Ideology wasn't considered in the same way that it is now. The mental technology that underpins our thinking of the Overton window did not exist at that point. We didn't think about popular will in the same way we are forced to today. It does not make sense as a universal political tool outside of the post-war settlement.
No.
And that's because it's a product of the liberal framework. And you must ultimately understand that this is communicated using propaganda and is enforced by the legal system and ultimately through violence.
I tell you what, can I mention quickly as an aside, I don't know if you'll be able to get the link quick enough, but I did mention it maybe a month or so ago. There is on the Shieldings YouTube channel, specifically on the subject of propaganda, my speech on Allure from a couple of years ago,
yes,
seeing as they'll be having their next event next week. So I thought I might as well try and give that a shill again if anyone wants to go and find that. I'm sure there'd be possibly a link in the comments or something afterwards. But yes, propaganda, especially in the modern era, is so dense. It's so pervasive and inescapable that we can't really escape the quote-unquote information environment. If anything, it's sort of more like an information panopticon that you're never allowed to not be seen by it. It's sort of an awful experience, really.
Well, the power center in modern... I'll go from here. What is culturally acceptable to say in a mass society is guided by ultimately legality, because in Western nations, most of the population is deeply averse to breaking the law in any way, at least consciously. Without the lie of democracy as a fig leaf, you can plainly see that law is imposed from above on a population by the elite to guide the behaviour of the mass. This is enforced by the ever closer informational management of society through technology, and that has allowed greater avenues for propaganda through dependent intermediaries in the press. The power centre in modern managerial states are the security services. It is they who shape the conversation. Their benefit via the use of hard power backstops of assassination, imprisonment, bribery, and blackmail. They are able to move the exception. So they're able to move as the exception, and therefore they become sovereign. It's nice to talk about the conversations being had, but ultimately it is about who and who can't be assassinated. It's about who and who can't be killed. It's about who and who can't be imprisoned. Ultimately, hard power is the only form of sovereign power.
Yes.
You have to be able to move against your enemies. And therefore, the idea of political technology doing it in the form of the Overton window doesn't make any sense.
Well, no, especially when the... I mean, we can maybe talk about the very brief, small space, I think, that exists between hard power and what's referred to as soft power, where you don't even really need to punch anyone. You just need to threaten that you might take their wage or their mortgage away or something. Yes. And this in and of itself becomes enough to shift the Overton window.
Ooh, we might have some fan funding here, though. Thank you, Balfour's Knight, for the $2. By strong social movements, gamers rise up. Thank you, Balfour's Knight, for that. And in our conception, the edges of the Overton window are hard. They cannot be pushed, and they create a container that all political conversation must fit into to remain acceptable. We are then told that this strictly enforced conversation, under threat of arrest, is simply the bottom-up shape of what people believe. NGOs, think tanks, and supposedly popular movements that are supported by the security state are able to create the illusion of bottom-up change. They manufacture consent. It is this way, in this way, the Overton window as a concept is not only flawed, but it is, in our view, a complete inversion of the way reality actually is.
Yes, and I think as well that we've, in a certain sense, documented a number of ways that even by the language of the people who came up with the concept itself, that it's clearly not this process that revolves around social change.
No.
That opinions, and particularly the collective political opinions that we're all supposed to hold, are by no means natural. They are the very cleverly and carefully crafted subset of values and antagonisms and things that we're supposed to feel righteous about, that everybody gets absorbed into, even our people. And in and of itself, the Overton window is its own like self-fulfilling prophecy in terms
yes,
of an idea.
It does.
Because even if you aren't a think tank and you're just some sort of talking head, you get to justify your existence because you go, I'm shifting the Overton window. I'm doing it all myself. I've pushed it this far. And I would say to those people, get your measuring tape out and show me just how far you've moved it.
Well, it's part of the democratic mental framework of what I call cheering the quarterback.
Yes.
You are in the crowd. You are not actually contributing to what the players on the field do. But I feel that you are.
But I cheered really hard. He made the touchdown. Yeah. Isn't? Am I not 1/10,000th responsible for that play?
I mean, yes, a cheering crowd can help hearten a team.
But it is the collective movement of a mass under the direction of some orchestrators, is it not?
Yeah, and it is only a secondary effect. You are maybe adding a little bit of hype, a little bit of mood. Mm. What you are doing is setting maybe some of the mood music of events. You are not actually in control of events.
You can't create kayfabe without a captive audience.
Yes, exactly. But it is. It's this idea that I am booing the heel, therefore I am making the heel lose. I am cheering the face, therefore I am making
the
face
win. We did it, guys.
Well, it is. It's we did it, guys. We move the Overton window. If you think you as an individual are having a measurable impact on the political conversation, then you are delusional.
Mm.
Unless you are actually in power, unless you actually wield tangible power, you do not have impact on the wider political conversation. But by definition, you are not somebody of influence if you are part of an amorphous blob who is quote-unquote pushing the Overton window. That's why we fiercely make so much fun of people who justify their existence by saying that they are participating in this bottom-up crowd exercise because they're saying, I'm cheering the quarterback. If you cheered harder, we'd just win. And it's a wrestling match. You know, it's a fixed match.
Yep.
You're cheering at a fixed game and you think that you are influencing
the
results.
Well, it's that fundamental problem with voting. It's not that people go out there and vote and make the mistake. It's that they don't vote hard enough. Look come at, on, vote harder, damn it. Vote look harder.
At, look at me, I'm voting. Look at me, I'm shifting the Overton window. I'm in control of politics.
I'm helping Daddy drive the car.
I'm a sovereign individual and my opinion matters.
Ooh, I'm so special.
But again, it's I'm sure certain people will maybe accuse of a form of political autism here, of splitting hairs. But really, if you are talking about the Overton window, you are talking about the bottom-up organisation of society inherently. That is what the words mean.
Yes. I mean, if you are using the Overton window as a sort of mask, you know, through which you are, I don't know, blackmailing politicians to deport thousands of ethnic minorities, you know, every week, then yes, you have shifted the Overton window. But you haven't done it by debating or through rhetoric. You've done it through political compromise, or you've got it through patronage, actions, not words.
No, and ultimately, it comes back to our kind of, it's the imaginary victory. The Overton window and why we would like to completely banish it from the sphere as a concept is because of this. It's because it leads to your imaginary victory.
Mm.
Sorry, kids. It'll be an imaginary victory this year.
I'm shifting the Overton window.
I'm red-pilling the normies. It's again, people get a little bit upset with our conception of these things. But really, what it is not existing in a political lie. It's not conceding to popular political terminology as a shortcut to quote-unquote communicate with the masses and put things in terms people can understand, end quote.
Yes.
If you are having to put things in liberal terms, using a liberal framework to quote-unquote get people to understand them, then you are completely ruining your ideas. You're destroying your ideas. You are surrendering to the milieu of kind of political theory that people spend their entire day immersed in.
Yes.
The Overton window really is just an illusion created by power and propaganda.
I mean, the thing is, I think at first, and I think in the vast majority of uses, it is nothing other than an excuse or a cover for the manufacture of public opinion, which in and of itself is bad enough.
Yes.
My worry is that, as I think is plainly obvious now, the aspects of the mainstream that are basically ready and willing to G up large parts of the right,
yes,
show them agitation, make them feel righteous about things, make them think that they're winning, that the public opinion's coming through to the fore and that people have had enough. That not only are you running along behind somebody else's efforts for somebody else's goals, I think a lot of you are actually doing the dirty work for them. You're running around posting more and more radical stuff on Twitter or YouTube or wherever else. I get what you're doing and I appreciate what you're up to, but if you think doing that is shifting the Overton window because somebody on GB News had a debate about ethnic English identity, I'm sorry, but you're being the early rebels of the colour revolution that have to be dealt with after the American regime comes in because you created atrocities. And that's not how a revolution proper should happen.
Thank you. I've had 2 £5 donations there. Thank you for the £5 donation to the IRA. Great stuff as always. Hope the Witton goes well. I'm not sure either of us will. I might be having a small guest appearance there at some point because I'm quite busy all the weekend. But I'm not quite sure either of us will be there. But I might try and say hi at some point.
What do you mean you're not sure either of us there? I'm definitely not.
Well, you're definitely not there. I may not be.
Unless someone's got £600, they can chuck me.
Will there be another Nomos in the near future? By the way, we're trying, guys. We've got a bunch of stuff we need to sort, but yes, there will be at some point. So there will be another Nomos at some point. The other thing I want to comment on with the Overton window is that. And the reason we're slightly autistic about having it not used.
Your words, not mine.
Yes. Well, it, a lot of people will be like, oh, you're just splitting hairs. Yeah, a lot of people said, yes, you shouldn't use your enemy's frame. You shouldn't use your enemy's framework. But it's to do with people's mental landscape as well. It's to do with the way we conceive of undertaking political action. We should be thinking about not the mass, but the Vanguard is ultimately another dividing line between people who believe in mass movements and people who believe in Vanguard movements.
Or more that people who have got their order the wrong way around.
Yes, but it also leads to the reverse thinking of we should think when the allowable conversation changes, why has the conversation been changed, not go, woo,
it's changed.
We've changed the conversation.
Exactly. I mean, I, as I always do, as much as I don't like using Twitter as much as I used to many years ago when this stuff, quite frankly, was a bit more shallow and fun, let's be honest.
Yes.
But I pay attention, and I see what I believe to be are the agents of containment, as it were. And these people seem to do nothing but intensify their rhetoric. If that doesn't terrify you, you have got this whole fucking thing backwards.
Yes.
And I think that's the fundamental point, is that people need to step out of, essentially, again, emotional manipulation, and not sit there and celebrate what they think is some rhetorical victory, because fundamentally, if you're a revolutionary, there is no victory. The revolution never ends, comrade.
Yes.
No matter what they give you, what concessions they give you, you always go back and say, no, that's not enough. You know, you fundamentally have to reject all of it. And large parts of the regime, under the auspice and guise and responsibility to some extent of aspects like MI5 or the newly founded SDS replacement, coming out and saying, these ideas are great. You know, we've changed our minds. These ideas used to be crap, but we think they're great now because we've seen different. Don't buy it. Even if they are all true and they are saying this stuff because they genuinely believe it, do you think us running around on YouTube getting 300 live viewers, if we're lucky, is going to stop their efforts?
No. We don't do this because we believe that we're going to create a popular movement of people who rise up. We're doing this because we want to communicate with people who are of a like mind of us and potentially organise with them, but in very basic ways. Community building, interconnection, people need to know each other. We always have talked about the walk before you can run. We've always talked about the fact that one of the biggest things we need is legal representation, we need actual organizational structure, we need people to be in each other's lives, we need to think of ourselves as a community first before anything else gets talked about, rather than running away rhetorically, because what people are allowed to say and what people are allowed to do are entirely different things. Mm. And if you are shifting the conversation, in quotes, or if you feel you are shifting the conversation, or the conversation is shifting, we should say, it doesn't mean that what is actually happening is shifting.
Of course.
The talk is moving. The reality will not be, in many cases. And that's what the whole based words thing that AA talks about is. But really, that's what we talk about, in that people saying, quote-unquote, based things, no matter why they're doing it, doesn't actually change anything.
Yeah, I don't care if, you know, like some form of some PA activist or someone who's far, far to the right gets the opportunity to at least look minorly respectable on some British TV show criticising the Israeli lobby in Britain or something.
It's Nick Griffin on Question Time.
Because as soon as Nick Griffin's on Question Time, you realise Nick Griffin's not going anywhere. And maybe that's not necessarily his own fault or by his own means, but the fact that they can pull you on and you being there doesn't shift the Overton window as a sign of the fact that you've been put in a box out on the edge of maybe not the Overton window, but the Ulul sphere.
I'll tell you what does shift the Overton window, though. Leaving a comment.
No!
Yes. Engage with Al Gore's rhythm to shift the Overton window, guys.
Literally the
only... Like this video to shift the Overton window.
It's the only thing you can do, we promise you.
Trust us. We at the Carlisle Institute...
would never lie.
Would never lie to
no.
you. And the only way to engage in political action is to help us by liking the video and commenting and subscribing.
Something in the comments mentioning V for Vendetta. I will remind you, as I've reminded many people before, the most unlikely thing about all those films like V for Vendetta is not the dystopia, but the fact that there's a revolution against the dystopia, because fundamentally, people do not rise up because they're stupid and they will live in pig shit.
Ultimately, yes. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. We'll see you guys next week. We'll not be too long of tooth, and have a good evening.
Good night. Go to the pub.